Let's start with John Constantine.
Okay.
Your first, the first mainstream hero. You took him from the concept of Alan Moore, and you had to establish him, to flesh him out, in a way. What were the main challenges with that?
Well, the main challenge was for me was I've never really written an extended comic book series at all. And I think the first Hellraiser story was my first sort of full-length 22-page comic book story. So that was a challenge in its own right, just sort of learning on the run what amount of material fits that amount of space. But other than that, the only way I know to write anything is to try to get inside the head of the character and experience the world through their eyes. And that was what I attempted to do, just basically understand the interior world of a crazy working class British magician, you know, which was, you know, intriguing, and I loved doing it. It's kind of in a way, it becomes a kind of channeling process, I suppose. You know, I relied quite a lot on internal monologue to tell the story through Constantine's eyes rather than first person. This kind of narrative style that, you know, it's an interior monologue. But it's not I did this, I did that all the way through, because that's a bit tedious. And just gradually learn who he was and how he responds to situations and give him some personality traits and quirks. And then once you get to know him, it becomes much easier to make him react with the world. And I just wanted a unique character, and to explore, you know, okay, it's a story in a horror genre, which is something I've never been a huge fan of horror books or anything, but that was the brief. So yes, there's got to be some sort of supernatural element, but I wanted to kind of use the supernatural elements as in a kind of allegorical way. And Constantine to me always sort of represents the humanity trapped between the warring forces of heaven and hell. You know, he's either neither on one side nor the other.
So
he's not good or he's not evil. He's steering humanity's course, and humanity is, you know, always caught between these, you know, two supernatural energies.
So the secret is not just to show that he's a chain smoker.
It means something. He's a chain smoker because of some aspect of his personality that drives him in that direction. You know, he's obviously got an addictive personality, or a reckless personality on some level. He's kind of a gambler. He always thinks on his feet. He's not a planner. I don't know, I suppose, as with any character that you create, you take certain elements of yourself and that you think might be applicable and leave the rest behind, you know, and then you understand something of what you're putting into the character if it reflects something inside yourself. So that's kind of my approach. It's kind of immersive. I'm never any good at plotting stories in advance or plotting more than one story, I can't, let alone a series or anything like that.
Yeah.
I kind of just have to understand the world a little bit and observe the character, put them in a situation, observe how they respond to it, and then select the interesting bits to fix on the page. I think cinematically, the story is cinematic, it's ongoing, but you've got to like just slice the frames and you know, pick that intrinsic truth, kind of like Japanese painting or something, you know, freezing the wave.
Did the fact that John Constantine was neither an established character like Superman, let's say, that everybody knows who Superman is, and there are some traits in his character that everybody knows. On the other hand, he wasn't your hero. I mean, you didn't invent him from scratch.
No.
Did it make it more difficult, more easy?
I didn't know any different, really. I mean, I just kind of did it by instinct. I mean, Alan Moore was a good friend of mine at the time, so I was aware of the background to the creation behind Swamp Thing, and just from conversations on a friendly level with him, you know, someone knew about the character or knew how Alan kind of thought of him, which wasn't necessarily the same way that I developed him. Alan was much more, he was much more of a sort of a cameo, if you like. It was much, you know, much less introspective. You know, Alan didn't really get into the interior workings. He just, you know, sketched out some parameters, and I deduced who the character might be from those and from conversations later. And I ran things past Alan in the early years, or the early issues, and sort of said, "Do you think this rings true or not?" You know, and so on. But then after that, I was on my own with it. I kind of got more possessive about the character, and, you know, and sort of took him where I wanted him to go, and people seemed to respond to it in a reasonably, you know, favourable way, so everybody was happy.
You establish the character, and then a line of other writers follow, many writers. They wrote for Constantine many occurrences, adventures or endings. Were there any particular of them you got jealous of? I wish I thought of it first.
Well, sounds a bit arrogant, but I didn't read all that many of them, because my relationship with Constantine is kind of a personal thing. Mm-hmm. I hoped that I'd built a character that was strong enough and multifaceted enough that other creators could come along and slip in there and reveal different aspects of his personality. And I think that kind of worked out over the years. I mean, I dipped into them. You know, I'd read a couple of issues by this author or that author, but I was busy doing other things and I didn't really want to just read Hellblazer stories all the time. There was nothing I was jealous of. There were some things I was irritated by, in a jokey kind of way. Like when Garth Ennis took over the character and changed him from being a sort of relatively refined gin-drinking sort of guy to somebody who shouted a lot and drank Guinness and got drunk and aggressive, which was different. But, you know, that was Constantine going through a different phase, and Garth's a really good writer, and, and the audience responded well to it. Probably better than they responded to my Hellblazer in terms of sales. You know, it was much more what they kind of wanted from a horror book, I think. Some of the other stuff I can't really remember too well. But everything I looked at, I still recognised Constantine in it. You know, nobody really contorted the character beyond recognition, as far as I can remember. And I always enjoyed the opportunity to come back just from time to time and sort of put my stamp back on him, just sort of put on the trench coat again and, just sort of say, "Look, here he is, he's still in here, you know, all right, now you take him off and do something different with him." But, you know, and I enjoyed the opportunity to come back to him for the very last one that I did, the graphic novel with Jock that I did in 2008 or 9, Pandemonium. That was my last, that'll be the last one that I ever write. Last Hellblazer story, and that was a sort of 25th anniversary story or something or other, and it gave me an opportunity to sort of touch base with the first issue and the last issue, those sort of elements that I set up in the first one that I could revisit. It gave me an excuse, because the demon in the first story was based on an Assyrian deity, that gave me the opportunity to visit Iraq in the first decade of the 21st century, which was an interesting environment to play in, and, you know, give a little tip of the hat to the war on terror and so on, which was something that exercised me quite considerably over the years, which DC weren't too keen on exploring in any depth, which is why I didn't do too much work for DC Comics in the first decade of the 21st century, because the state of the world is what preoccupies me, generally speaking, and if I can't approach it even in some weird, twisted, codified way, I don't know what the purpose of writing is, you know, so I didn't. America was very touchy about politics in that time.
And so, all the time,
but more so, particularly, you know, in the wake of 9/11 and Afghanistan and Iraq and all the shit that went on there. So I appreciated that opportunity at least, and I've tried to sort of be as sort of subtle and even-handed with the political content as I could manage. So as I say, there won't be any more because they've killed Hellblazer, and now Constantine is this anemic rebrand of a character that I've absolutely no interest in going anywhere near, and I don't think they'd want me to either, because I know it would bring too much resonance of the old guard, as it were.
You haven't read anything from the new?
No, I don't think I will do.
You haven't written any comics for some long?
No, the last one I wrote was Crossed, I think, for Avatar.
Yeah, Badlands.
Yeah, that was another chance to sort of subvert a Garth Ennis idea in a little way, I think. A little bit of revenge for the way he took over from me on Hellblazer, so I can never resist the challenge, you know.
Was it as enjoyable as it seemed, to let it all out?
Yeah, I often describe it as sick shit that I'm ashamed of, but and it is, it's outrageous, but there was there's so much violence in the culture at the moment, real life violence everywhere, that I just felt the need to demonstrate that in an unmitigated sort of way. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, let rip. None of the characters will be sympathetic. Everybody will be up to their neck in ugliness and violence from start to finish, and there will be no happy ending. And yeah, go for it. And it was quite liberating in a lot of ways. And I got a little undertone of subversion politics in there, and you know, which is what I like to do. I like to put a little bit of Delano into everything that I do. And it was very well received. I've had a better response to Cross than I had to just about anything in the last 15 years,
really?
I should think. Because it was popular in the first place.
But yeah.
Everybody read it and thought, that's fit the brief. You know, that's done what they wanted. So, yeah, I did enjoy it. I certainly won't be doing any more. I was a bit offended when the book actually came out that Avatar did a limited edition, what they call torture covers, and there was some overt sort of sexual violence against women on the cover that I really found a bit too much. And they kind of said, oh, sorry, Jamie, if we've reached your limits, kind of thing, in a supercilious sort of way. So I just thought, I won't bother anymore then. But I mean, that's unnecessary. I mean, the material is pretty strong anyway, but to put a cover on it, there's absolutely no relation to the story inside it, just for its pure shock value and to appeal to the worst tastes of teenage boys, you know, probably going to be go on to the Columbine shooters or something like that. You know, I was a bit offended, I have to say.
What was my next question? Should there be any limits in this kind of stuff?
There shouldn't be any limits externally imposed, I don't think. But they're probably, if you're a sane and rational human being, you should probably be thoughtful about what you're writing about, what you're depicting about, and how you're approaching. You should write about anything that you want to write about. Clearly you have something to say about or an observation to make about it, but you should be conscious of the effect that that may have, and you should try and mitigate that effect in some way by, I don't know, pointing out an alternative view, introducing a subtext that, you know, just the world's very complex and people's reactions to it are complex. You can't possibly accommodate every potential crazy person who's out there and what they might be inspired by or otherwise. But I think there's room for taste. You know, it may be an extreme taste, but I think you should be thoughtful about what you're doing and what you're asking somebody to draw, what images you're making available for the world to look at. There should be a point to it. Nothing should be gratuitous just because it's going to have a great effect on a turnover page or something. You see somebody split from arse to tit and people devouring their intestines or whatever it may be. Or, as I say, I particularly dislike overt sexual violence against women. I think that's extremely counterproductive. The world is full enough of real life sexual violence towards women and minorities So I don't like to go there unless there's a reason for it, unless I'm going to present some kind of counter argument. I won't sanction that kind of thing. But bottom line, I'm opposed to censorship on a pretty much on an absolute level. But I would prefer to be able to trust people to do the right thing than otherwise going to, and that's a risk that we take with that stance.
Yeah.
But so no limits, but apply a little bit of intellect and restraint when you feel it necessary. There's always ways to approach any subject without being totally blatant and crass.
Let's stick to the horror genre, which you're mostly known of, and you're enjoying the most, obviously. What is it that, for you, that makes the horror genre stand out? Is it the challenges?
Horror is a great way of simply producing allegories for emotion and for politics and for conflict in the real world. You get good drama out of it. You can get strong drama, but you can, it can be empowered by subtleties, subtle emotional understandings, things like that. And it's a way of getting into the psyches of people, dramatizing the interior worlds of people, in an effective and direct way. I do have a reasonably dark imagination and a reasonably dark perception of the world that we live in and of human nature. It has its shining moments, and I like most individuals that I meet, but I probably dislike the species as a whole.
Do you enjoy writing prose stories the same way as writing comics?
It's different, and I went a long time without practicing writing any prose because I was very distracted by writing comics, and it kind of got to a stage where I always had an ambition right from being about 12 or something to one day be a novelist. That was where I always expected my writing ambitions would take me. I got distracted and sidelined into comics because it was a great way to make a living, meet a lot of interesting, fun people, and it was good. And I enjoyed all of that, but there was always this thing in the back of my mind, you still haven't written a novel, and you should be. And it started to dawn on me that I'm getting on towards my seventh decade now on the planet, and time is not unlimited. And if I didn't get on with it soon, I may not get that opportunity. So, and also I was a bit disenchanted with comics. I wasn't really finding anything new that I wanted to say, or I got just a little bit jaded, a little bit habitual with it. And I wasn't really looking for new comics work actively. So I sat around for a year or so, being miserable and driving everybody at home crazy. And eventually, and stage fright basically, I was, I didn't know whether I could write a novel. Maybe I've just become a comic writer and I'm only able to, work in that medium. So that kind of bothered me. And eventually my family just said, for fuck's sake, will you write this? Because you're driving us all nuts. Do something. So I locked myself away, and it was a bit distracting because my father died halfway through it. A long illness with Alzheimer's disease, which was difficult to deal with as well as try and write this book. So it took me a little while, but I really enjoyed it. It's different to comics because it's not collaborative.
Do you feel it more personal this way?
It's always personal when I write anything, but more personal writing a novel. And this was quite a sort of a personal novel, this first one. I just wanted to see if I could do it. I didn't know if I was going to make it available for anybody to read. I didn't really know what it was going to be about. I just knew that I'd got to sit down and start writing some extended prose and try to understand how that would work for me. So I just started writing a story about a middle-aged writer whose fictional world kind of overtakes his reality in some way. And he's got a massive extended family who are causing problems all over the place and emotional stress, and you know, and he can't focus on writing, and eventually it all sort of overtakes him. And so it was quite personal on some levels. I mean, it's not about me or my family per se, but it's about my experience of being me and having a big family, and so on and so forth. So yeah, so I wrote it and thought about it for a little while, showed it to some members of my family, and they all thought it was readable, and decided that I'd put it out under a name other than Jamie Delano, purely because I didn't want to misrepresent it to people as a Jamie Delano novel and raise expectations that it might be, you know, in the mode of things that I'd written before. I mean, it's identifiable as me as an author writing it, but the subject matter isn't. So I put it out under a different name, and I decided to self-publish it just because I could, and because all the technology is available to do that now, and because I wanted to be totally responsible. Like, I'd take all the credit if anybody liked it, and all the blame if nobody did, or a mixture of the two, you know. And so I just had some copies printed, designed a cover for it, and made it available via a website, and then singularly failed to tell anybody about it. So I've only sold a handful or two, you know, but I'm happy enough with that. And it also set up the opportunity within its structure. The writer is the main protagonist of it, has an ongoing character who's made his fortune for him over the years. So I thought, well, it'd be interesting to take that character out of this first story and give him a series of stories of his own. So now I'm doing that, I'm in the process of doing that, and these are much more genre, and they will be coming out under the name Jamie Delano, and hopefully attract a bit more attention. It's just sort of all stuff set in a near future parallel universe, England, which is spelled INGLUND. And it's just what the world might be in 10 years' time if a lot of bad shit happens suddenly. And it's kind of noir, sort of detective, crime, political satire, dystopic future, and black humour, basically. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. I thought when I started it, it was just going to be a fast read, fast write kind of thing. And it should still be a fast read, but the fast write part of it has sort of failed to materialise because for some reason the book has elected to be written in totally in the present tense, in quite perfunctory, short, punchy Twitter-type sentences. So it's quite exciting. I'm quite enjoying it because it's the first novel I wrote. I tried to sort of be reasonably conventional in the structure of it and the grammar of it. But this one I just wanted to play with prose and see what effects I could do. I'm kind of starting to think of it as a graphic novel without pictures. It's it's got that immediacy to it that graphic novels have. And I hope it carries on going the way it's going at the moment, because I'm having a lot of fun with it. And I've not abandoned comics. I will, hopefully, when I've got a couple of books out of my system, it will refresh my interest in the comics medium.
And you haven't any projects in the works?
I have no comics projects in the work at the moment, no. Basically because nobody's asked me to do any, and I haven't pursued, I haven't dreamt up anything new that I really want to do. I've been focusing on this prose work, and but as I say, I'm hoping this might refresh my perspective a little bit, and then I shall try and think of something new and original to do, and hopefully find an artist and take it to somebody. But that might not be for 12 months or so.